Rocking out to this, like
what? No,
you're, like
what?
Standing there, like staring at your phone, like you know, like I'm, nodding your head along to the music.
Anyway, this is Zimco Radio 5.3.
I think it's two. I want it to be three because it's the third game.
We zero index. That's right.
Yeah,
like good engineers, except you're not.
No. I'm a history. Everyone else who works for you is a history major.
Anyway, we are live.
It's Jim Harbaugh. Yeah.
Can I do the sponsor thing now?
Yeah, do the sponsor.
We're live from the Bow Store on Main Street. It's a Thursday, but Seth's heading out to Madison.
Yeah, I've never been. No, I went once. I've never been to the stadium.
I see.
Yeah, we got there and then didn't realize that like tickets are actually expensive and yeah. We were college students.
You ever been to Milwaukee?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like a lot.
Just you know, it's Milwaukee.
I was there once.
Yeah. My buddy and I do baseball trips. Like we try to see every single baseball stadium. So Milwaukee was one of the hits.
Yeah, I've been to Milwaukee.
Have you been to Madison?
No, maybe.
It's supposed to be gorgeous.
Yeah. How about...
It was my safety school.
Oshkosh.
Oh, I have not.
This whole podcast is just going to be me
Naming
asking
Name Green
you.
Bay.
I've never been to Green Bay. That's another one I haven't been to. Fond du Lac.
Okay.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Possibly.
Fond du Lac.
Yeah.
So...
That's impressive. I didn't think like Wisconsin would actually get like the French pronunciation down.
Well, you know, whatever.
Someone like had to correct them.
I think we're going to have to stop this podcast because I'm out of Wisconsin cities. I remember what the names are of.
You could get through the rest of the sponsors.
Oh, yes. How about we do that? We would like to thank our sponsors. Our presenting sponsors are the Bow Store and Underground Printing, Homeshore Lending, the Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Perrin Brewing. So, we took a hiatus last week because we had a bye week, so we had a bye ourselves. So we haven't actually talked about the Army game.
Oh.
Just the two of us. I've talked about the Army game with, like...
With other people?
With other people.
But we haven't talked about Army before.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
So...
I might have not, like, brought up the thing in conversation. Like, you know, it's not the sort of thing that you say politely to somebody. Like, so, how did you like that Army game?
Well, one of the interesting things is now, like, Al Borges is back on the beat. And
I didn't mean to laugh at all.
And he's like doing interesting stuff with Sam.
He is. So some of the stuff that he does with Sam is actually like, you know, I'm glad I understand that now.
Well, and one of the things that he brought up that I thought was interesting is he was talking about one of the reads that I think the whole internet was like, you got to keep that.
Right.
And his assertion was that because Army had two guys outside of the tackle, that was a correct give read. And, of course, the two guys outside of the tackle are both hauling for the running back, and so
it
doesn't work. So, but, like, he might not be wrong.
Well, saw what I thought they were doing, where, like, that line, that second guy, it can be outside or inside. They're playing the – we have two guys playing the read, really.
Right, and they're only kind of half playing the read. They're kind of baiting it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that kind of leapt out to me when I was doing the UFR was actually a successful Michigan run where it's a give read, they block it to the safety, and then the shuffle defensive end is able to tackle Charbonnet from the side. And this isn't something that goes to the backside, right? This is something that goes like two or three gaps away from this dude. And he is so like focused on the running back that he's able to shuffle up, and then as soon as there's the slightest indication that there's a give, he's just on his horse and he goes.
I mean, Army's not the first guys to do that. Like, everyone who plays a zone read is trying to do something like that.
Yeah, but so...
This was, like, what you're trying to do is force them to the read and force them to the one that you're prepared
to
do.
Back to what Borges was saying. Borges is probably correct that a lot of these looks from Army are give looks.
Mm-hmm.
But Army was playing it such that you get the give look and then you get the support of those players anyway. And that is something as an offense that you have to challenge. And I feel like Michigan, whether it was the Patterson injury or various other things, they decided not to challenge the way Army was playing it. And then you have a bunch of run surfaces where you're down a guy.
Yeah. I heard that Borges quote, and my immediate response was, no, you're playing a sport. You're playing a game. And part of what you're, you know, any kid who sat in the basement with a basketball hoop and their brother who, like, sees, like, okay, is he fainting this way? Then I go this way. It's not just a technical thing where, like,
it's not
this
robotic.
Guy is... It's not robotic. Yeah. No, you're playing a game. And the idea is you're trying to get that guy to be moving the wrong way so you can scoot out the other way.
Yeah.
I agree with you that you have to try it from a technical, from an engineering standpoint. But this isn't an engineering game. This is two guys looking at each other going, okay, which way are you going? Because I'm going the other way.
I mean, that's basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But the thing that kind of got me about that is, like, last year, how many times did Shea Patterson challenge shuffle ends?
All the time.
A lot, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's there. It's work. He's fast enough to get outside a guy, especially if he's leaning the wrong way, which Army ends were doing a lot in this game. So why isn't he keeping this time around after his, like, season-long progression? Last year, it's got to be the injury.
That's one theory, yeah.
And so, like, he's able to be like, all right, I don't know if I want to keep this. And it changes his decision-making process. Something that I think he just said in a recent press conference is that, like, it affected his whole game.
Yeah.
And that would be part of his game. So, and this, I think, is the fundamental flaw in what Michigan was doing, is that they had a quarterback read run game that saw exactly one quarterback keep that got downloaded by a corner blitz. And that, you know, that's going to happen, right? Like, fine. I kind of feel like you should be able to see an Army cornerback in press coverage to the boundary and be like, because
I feel like
much.
An Army cornerback, you should be looking at that guy every play and be like, okay, is that okay? No, no, right. Okay. Oh, he's up on, you know, like,
right.
Every play you should be checking that guy because you have such a talent differential.
But
in any case,
that's a play you need to check out of because of the corner blitz. If you give that ball, it's just going to be a tackle at the line of scrimmage. It's not going to be an 11-yard loss like it turned out to be, but that's a lose-lose,
yeah.
Right? So, and the kind of bothersome thing about that game is Michigan actually started off doing pretty well. Like, I had them with the first five RPS pluses, so they were up 5-0,
right.
And then they were like 4 and minus 19 the other way, so the rest of the way. So that kind of gets to you.
Especially in a close game, and like Army's a smart team, they're a well-coached team. I would expect Army to do well in the RPS metric either way.
Yeah.
I did not expect Michigan to just kind of bash their faces into this wall again and again. And like you said, what was my takeaway after the MTSU game, Michigan's offense? That Gattis has added a read to everything.
Right.
What was the problem in the Army game? We weren't using the read.
Yeah.
The offense is built around the fact that you got to make that read.
They did do it a couple times. There were some RPOs that got successfully thrown. There were a couple other situations where I thought the read was functional.
Yeah.
But for the run game as a whole, it just wasn't there.
I think Army did the thing that everyone should have expected them to do, which was come in prepared to defend Michigan's arc read game.
Yeah.
And Michigan absolutely should have had responses to that.
Well, and the thing that really got to me is, so, like, what the arc read isn't like the base play, right? The base play is split zone.
Yeah.
So you can just run split zone. And then you block the crashing defensive end, and the scrape backer is headed outside, and then you have that lane.
I mean, you'd have to run into the front side if you're going to do that. Yes,
no, because like if they're exchanging,
yeah,
then you block the end, and then I mean the linebacker might be able to come back and get to it, but like they ran split zone 3 times in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them were short yardage touchdowns, and one was a 5-yard play on like 2nd and 8 where I gave Collins a -2 for completely failing to block a defensive back.
Okay.
So they have split zone. They ran it 3 times. It worked all 3 times. And it's the natural complement to what Army is trying to get you to screw up defensively. And then you get down to that 4th and 2 where they're running a play that is just arc zone sellout. So
yeah.
They have the guy who just zips past Eubanks, forces the give.
They're bringing everybody there's possibly could bring off
right.
that
and,
edge.
And then the end crashes down and Charbonnet is pretty much dead meat. He could have pressed it to the outside, but he's got a guy running straight at his face and he's taking the handoff to the left of the quarterback. So he's got to change direction and try to press the front side. I just don't see that happening. So that's a little concerning is the fact that Michigan should have a play that should be effective.
I agree. Michigan should have a play that works on 4th and 2.
I mean, a specific play.
I think that the problem is you go into this game, arc read is like the number one thing that Michigan's been successful on, and you're not running anything off. You're running that play, the one play that you knew they'd be prepared for on your 4th and 2. It reminded me of James Franklin against Ohio State last year.
Well, it was
like, I'll get them with a zone read. They'll not expect this.
It was easy. It was easy to kind of lull yourself into that because last year, like every critical third down late in games, it was arc read and Patterson kept and nobody.
Do you know what they called last year, which they didn't call once in this game, was belly, which is another one that punishes that kind of behavior.
Yeah. Wash down the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good point. I didn't even. It's just a little bit that it's obviously just game two. Everybody has their off games, and this was definitely one of them.
I mean, part of my takeaway for this too is the fumbles changed the entire outlook for the game because the defense was doing its job. If Michigan goes out there, runs some vanilla offense, doesn't show anything, doesn't use its reads because it doesn't want to get Patterson hurt, and they win 28-7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the fumbles were part of it, but also just the fact that, like, you know, you have these Army quarterbacks playing off 10 yards, and, like, you don't have a smoke. You're not throwing, like, hitches.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's not like it's not been in the offense before. We've seen that how many times?
You're not running, like, a smash concept or something? Like, I just felt like...
Did you notice? I don't know if you got to read it yet. I threw a smash concept and, like, drew it up onto the Wisconsin defense thing. Just be like... Idea, here you go. I was yelling that.
It just seems like that's a way to, like, have some short, easy passing, get Patterson in a rhythm, get Nico Collins involved. And they, for whatever reason, just didn't do it. Any of it. Like, not like, you know, the bubble screen thing is one thing, but just how many times in this season have we seen Nico Collins run something short? How many times does it work?
When's the last time Michigan carved up a zone defense?
I don't know.
Indiana?
I mean, not with Patterson.
No, I think it goes back to, like, Rudock?
I mean, he had a couple of pretty good outings late in that year, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's just, you know, the you kind of get hyped about, like, this new offense. It's gonna really work. And then in game two, they just kind of feel like they're out of ideas. And that kind of, doesn't feel good.
Do you remember in 2016 beating up on Penn State? And it wasn't just their defense that was terrible. Their offense just had no clue what it was doing.
Yeah, I mean, the Penn State team was, like, down to their, like, fourth-string middle linebacker. And
but forget about the defense for a second. Like, yeah, and Franklin's field goal and stuff, too. But, like, they had some interesting ideas in that game, and they also had some interesting ideas that they didn't execute.
Yeah.
And this offense reminds me a little bit of, you know, Joe Moorhead's first year at Penn State, where, like, they're sticking to, like, some concepts. They're getting things wrong. They're getting their reads wrong. And then, like, the next step for 2016 Penn State was they just went to this all RPO offense for a while, and then it started kicking in from there.
Yeah, so the thing is, they had this come-to-Jesus moment, I think, against Army, and they had a bye week.
Right.
A well-positioned bye week, given the data that they had just brought in and their next opponent. And this Wisconsin game is going to be, I think, very telling. Like, did they take what happened against Army to heart?
Yeah.
Are they better able to connect the various plays that they have? Because that was our complaint last year, right, is that they really didn't connect the various parts of their offense. And I don't feel like they really did it in this Army game either.
The RPOs that they ran looked like they were all based off of their passing game does use play action from their running game, which is something that should be obvious, but also was not necessarily a given last year.
Well, so one of the interesting things is, like, you watch these plays and they're running an RPO opposite a stretch, and, you know, Army drops a guy into it. The run surface is actually favorable to Michigan, so they have a blocker for every guy, but Army is, like, dipping guys inside on the stretch, and it just, there are things that you can do as when you're running the stretch to defeat these games, and Michigan didn't feel comfortable executing them. And that's because, like, you know, outside zone way back in the day when not Tim Drevno, but the previous Tim Drevno
Oh, funk?
No, no, before that, like the dying days of Lloyd Carr's regime, they bring in Mike DeBoard.
DeBoard, yes.
They bring in Mike DeBoard and they make their entire...
Recently retired Mike DeBoard.
They make their entire offense zone stretch.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all they did. And then...
To the left.
Well, yeah, they had Jake Long. And it didn't really work very well because the heyday of the zone stretch in the NFL was like, you know, Terrell Davis with the Broncos.
Right.
And it had its moment, and then people are thinking about it all the time. And it kind of feels similar. Michigan has adopted the RPO right when everybody is thinking about the RPO constantly. And so, like, if you're running kind of the basic RPO stuff, defenses have thought about how to deal with it and are better at dealing with it than they would have been 4 years ago.
I mean, it's still like any other concept. It gets digested, but, like, your talent is going to outweigh...
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if you have an RPO system and you have a wide receiver that they absolutely have to keep a linebacker back, and a running game that they absolutely have to keep a linebacker running into the line for.
Well, so, like,
yeah.
Once you have adapted to whatever the basic RPO stuff is, your defense is going to be showing different vulnerabilities, and it's about who is the person who gets to those vulnerabilities first. And the thing that is most obvious to me is that when you get your safeties involved in the RPO game, and they're assuming that that's going to be a slant, and they're assuming that it can't be anything else because you're going to get too far downfield, well, that's when you kind of give them the old rope-a-dope with your fake RPO, and then you hit the big play. So is Michigan going to be able to get there first? And I kind of thought that this would be a good candidate to do this. You know, Josh Gattis, he's 35. Under Moorhead, those are the kind of guys where if you get the right one, they really kind of bust it open, break open whatever the response from the defense is.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's not the case. I'm saying the Army game was a little bit concerning, and now, like, this next stretch of three or four games, I think we're going to see the rubber hit the road. Not necessarily in terms of, like, if Michigan gets everything right, but, like, what is the structure of the offense? Are they getting RPS wins? Because that was the thing that they didn't really get very much of in the Army game.
Yeah, and how much are they using their talent again? Like, if they're just riding on the fact, you can't do what you did against Army, where you just expect Charbonnet and Onwenu and, like, those guys to just plow forward into a line and create 4 yards at a time.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get 2 yards at a time against everybody else we play. You're going to get nothing against Michigan State.
Well, and the thing is like, so you have these receivers, and when you have elite NFL receivers, one of the main things you want to do is force the defense to spend two guys defending them. And when Army was playing 10 yards off, we saw what happened the one time they actually tried to throw a punt to Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. You know, the defensive back is over the top of that route. He wins that route, and he gets the pass interference because the ball's badly thrown. But they only had one guy out there.
Yeah.
And if you are taking that go route and you're turning it into a comeback route, I don't think that guy is sticking with Nico Collins. And then you can just hammer that. And then when they make their inevitable changes to, you know, give this guy some safety help, change up what they're doing, then your run game opens up. So they had multiple opportunities to do something that would change the fact that they ran for 3.3 yards a carry against Army with Charbonnet. And I think I've said this before, it's worrisome that they didn't really have a good plan.
No, I mean, the best thing I can go back to is, you know, Shea was hurt. Their passing game actually was pretty effective, except for the fact that Patterson missed some guys, and if you attribute that to his injury, maybe they just didn't put a lot of time and thought into the running game, because they're like, okay, this is going to be the sideshow, and we're going to pass a few times, and you only get so many plays against Army.
And then the other thing that kind of stood out in terms of, like, this could be a long-term issue that means this offense doesn't get where we want it to go is Shea Patterson's pocket presence. So
right.
He has the two strip sacks early in the game where Turner misses blitz pickups. And there's been some dispute about...
Was, like, Hayes on one of them?
I don't think so. Because, so the situation there is you have a defensive end who's not really rushing. What he is going to do is he's going to track Turner out of the backfield if he releases out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. But what if Turner actually picks up this linebacker? What if he goes and picks up the linebacker? What does the defensive end do then?
And he's going to come in?
Yeah, he's going to convert into a rusher, which linebackers do all the time.
Right.
So you can't just say, like, oh, Hayes goes and blocks the linebacker and then it's fine because
the defensive end is going to come.
Yeah, the end's going to come. So I think he's executing his assignment. And Turner doesn't execute his assignment, but also talking about pocket presence, that ball's got to be gone because that's a linebacker who's looping around two gaps off where he lined up. He's coming flat-footed from 5 yards downfield, and you have a drag route. That's got to be gone.
Yes, and there are different kinds of pass rush. There's the pass rush where the outside linebacker or defensive end gets to the back, like gets around the backfield, and then you just getting rid around in an arc, and it's fine because your pocket is still okay.
Yeah.
And there's the kind where someone's doing that and somebody's caving in, right?
Right.
And Shea reacts to all of them the same way. If he sees that guy looping out there, it's over. Like, he's not looking downfield anymore, or he's just hanging on, and he kind of fritzes out, or he starts running around. And
I don't want to be too definitive about that yet.
No, like, there was nothing in football's definitive.
But, like,
yeah,
so
compared to other quarterbacks that you watch.
So he gets these two strip sacks. The second one is not his fault at all.
Yeah.
Second one, any quarterback in the country is going to have that happen. But, so he's got... There are four protection minuses pretty quickly in this game, and there are four the whole rest of the game. And he's still bugging out of pockets, like on three-man rushes. And like that feels kind of like what was happening last year. And if he's still stuck in that mode, that dampers my enthusiasm.
I mean, he is good as a scrambler quarterback, but you don't want your quarterback to always just be scrambling because that's not... You know, that's not better than running the dang play that you called.
Especially in this context, when you have a couple, you don't just have Nico Collins. You also have Tariq Black. You have two guys who, I mean, we don't know this yet because they haven't actually done it, but two guys who project as elite 50-50 ball guys.
Yeah.
So if they're not open, they're still kind of open, right? Just give your receivers a shot. You're going to get some plays.
See where look where the safety is, and whichever receiver he's not taking, throw it to the other guy.
Right, like having a jetpack, not a jetpack, a ripcord, where it's just like, all right, we're going to punt it up to one of our huge leapy guys, is something that, I mean, I keep bringing this up, but I was doing clips for Nico Collins last year, and he had zero true like downfield jump balls. He had a couple fades against Ohio State that he brought in.
Yeah, and
we're gonna give this guy a shot 30 yards downfield.
Yeah, it's so exciting when that happens too. Like, it scares the hell out of the defense, and then like everyone kind of shifts their expectations of like what the offense can do after that. You're like, you know, if you shoot somebody and you miss, the feeling that the bullet just went by your head is not going to go away just because like, oh, I'm safe now. I can go back to what I was doing. And that's kind of what it feels like when Nico Collins is downfield and the ball goes in the air.
Yeah. So those are things that I didn't like.
Can I add one more complaint?
Okay, one more complaint.
Michigan has to start practicing their jet sweeps and teaching these guys to cut inside.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts every single time I see a guy try to go outside and the blocking is giving him a cut.
Yeah.
And I mean, just practice that. Send the guy out there and have him cut off a block 8 times and he'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got, I mean...
All right. We've complained enough. Some positives for the offense.
Okay.
I thought, despite Zach Charbonnet's poor yards per carry outing, I think he did as well as possible. Didn't miss any blitz pickups and had a couple of really, really nice abilities to regap in the hole when he got some trouble. Like, his ability to shift himself and keep momentum combined with his size.
Is there a way we could say this like without making it sound like he's a 5-star? Because I started talking about him like he's awesome this week, and immediately there's rumors that he's hurt. Yeah. So keep it down.
No, I mean, you can't.
No, you're gonna have to do this for the next four
it's
years,
not my
Brian.
Fault.
Just kind of like stay.
All right. So
it's still changing. Like, he, you know, oh, Charbonnet is awesome. Oh, he had a surgery today. Oh, no, he sucks. Well, okay, he didn't have a surgery today.
I'm not going to do that because I don't know how to talk about someone accurately and also do that. Anyway, and then the other thing is, I thought, aside from Ryan Hayes, who had a very, very rough game, the offensive line basically did what it was expected to. And that includes Jalen Mayfield, who had kind of a bumpy first outing. Like, my offensive line grades were very good. And that's something that you need to see against Army. But, you know, it's not nothing to be able to pick up all the various things that Army is running and shove guys downfield like you're projected to preseason. So plug in Runyon on the left side, who was an excellent run blocker a year ago. And I think you're going to see Michigan really start handing it to teams that aren't quite prepared for this level of offensive line. And that probably includes Wisconsin this weekend, although that's another segment.
Yeah. We'll have plenty of Wisconsin on this.
So it's not all doom and gloom. It didn't quite turn out the way we wanted to, but a lot of the pieces are there. I think, you know, you're going to have four of five, maybe five of five guys on the line who are very, very good. Charbonnet looks to be panning out. If they would just, give Black and Nico some more opportunities, I think they would perform well. It's still possible that Michigan gets to something approximating what we were hoping for preseason, but the big kind of open question marks are offensive structure in the aftermath of the Army game. And is Shea Patterson last year Shea Patterson, or has he progressed?
Right. And also, like, the offensive line has gone against MTSU and Army. Like, there's going to be a step up starting this week in the kind of defensive tackle shooting.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. But that's another segment. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the other side of the ball, for whatever that's worth.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Why do you do what you do? I grew up in the small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed great people I care about making a lot of poor financial decisions. I thought to myself, I never want to be in that position, putting my retirement at risk. Now we want to make sure that your retirement is not at risk. And by providing education and guidance, we inspire our clients to make great decisions, putting them on a path to be able to retire with confidence. I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP, President and Founder at
Peak Wealth Management.
And that's my why.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
One, two, one, two. Oh, no.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.3 live from the Bow Store on Main Street, special Thursday edition, because Seth is headed to Madison.
That's right. You could have come with me.
I have two very small children, and it's just not happening this year.
Yeah.
It's maybe a year or two away from actually. Also, you know.
No, I was in that same spot, you know, for a while.
The wife has the old job, so it's a little bit of a sticky wicket during the fall.
Yep. We started kindergarten this year, so things got a little easier on me. Yeah.
Yeah, that must be nice. Anyway,
the
Michigan defense against Army came out with pretty much the same approach that they had against Air Force a couple years ago, which was a 3-3-5 with three deep safeties. Army responded in a very similar fashion, where they would load up one side of the line with a couple of tight ends and a wing back.
Except for they didn't do the nice Air Force thing and stopped doing it.
Right, but I mean, Michigan was able to like cope with it, I think, better than they did 2 years ago. And in part, that was because Josh Uche battled and I think demonstrated he was an every down player. So he did play almost every down in this game. And when they went to this kind of jumbo package, he was the guy moving to the line of scrimmage as the Sam, and he came in with an absolutely giant number. So he was plus 18 and minus 11, which is, it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, especially.
It's a lot of activity for like an outside linebacker.
Especially in a game with virtually no pass rush for him.
Like, right.
When he's racking up those kind of numbers almost exclusively as a run defender, this is a new world for him. And like, you know, he got pancaked once and he had his moments where he got locked inside and you know, didn't do very well, but he made up with that because sometimes he'd give up two yards a ground and you're like, okay, this isn't going to go well. And then he just ripped past the dude. And more than that, he would explode upfield into the quarterback and he would stick the guy for no yards after contact at the line of scrimmage.
And yards after contact were so important in this game.
It's playing. Oh, my God.
Like, oh, great. We stopped them for two. Oh, no, they got three.
Right.
Like, that's what this entire game was.
I have never seen the level of desperate gang tackling.
Where
there's like four guys and they're like desperately
trying. Or the whole stadium is silent while they spot the ball every single time. Like, oh, God, no, don't give them a yard.
But anyway, Uche was able to cope. I wouldn't exactly say thrive on the edge there, but you know, if he's able to do this against a guy who's probably a better blocker than most of the guys he'll come up against as a Sam, because he wasn't going up against a tight end.
Right.
He was going up against a junior OL who weighed about 265. So, you know, given the modern tight end is a little bit of a, you know,
yeah.
a Bobby from King of the Hill, you know, it's not inconceivable that he's going to get tight ends like that as a Sam, and he's just going to wreck them. So, the tougher question is, like, what happens if, you know, he's a Sam on a three-man line and Wisconsin is doing Wisconsin things? Like, they're pulling guards to him.
I mean, he's, 265 now? He's not a
255? No, he's 250. He's 250.
That is defensive end size.
This is really the first extended evidence we've had that he can do anything resembling run defense.
Yeah.
And I think he passed the test, and I think he's going to get his shot against Wisconsin. I hope it goes well. I think it'll go decently. I'm still concerned because the way Michigan has played him so far in his career, you know, this would be a big leap forward for him. And it looks like there's a shot that he made it. It's hard to say that he definitely has.
Yeah, and I think both of us had similar takes of what we want to see them do against Wisconsin based off of this game, as either just like be shooting somebody in the backfield off that edge, whether it's Uche or it's Malik Hudson. Like,
but that's another thing.
But like getting back to what we saw from Uche, like the fact that he could play like that against a run defense like this, you know, the only thing we haven't seen now is him like getting out into pass protection. Pass coverage, yeah. And if he can cover like an outside linebacker can in a 3-4, like that's a guy that you can play on most downs.
Yeah,
different positions, but yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I think that, you know, the other thing that kind of jumped out as like the other big deal player in this game both ways was Khalik Hudson. So Hudson had his share of very good plays. He was also pretty much solely responsible for the big chunk pass they had.
You said he had a Mouton game.
He did have a Mouton game.
Has anyone had a Mouton game since Mouton?
As a linebacker?
Yeah, like I was almost like mad that you like evoked that because like
double digits in both directions as a linebacker,
is a mouton.
I have to say a mouton. That's a mouton.
Yeah, but like that would happen to him against Iowa. Like Army does things to you, man. Like if you're sitting there watching run after run after dive after dive after dive and you feel like useless because you can't do anything about it, and then all of a sudden they run a guy past you, like
but chunk pass wasn't that.
No, it was him like passing it off and forgetting he didn't have a safety behind him.
The chunk pass was a second and eight where he had successfully dropped into coverage and just didn't run with the wheel route.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's in a different defensive structure than he is almost every other week, so I kind of get why he would bust in that situation, but it is like a big, ugly minus three bust. And like that, that's the difference between an Army touchdown, which that drive was, and third and eight. So...
And he had the hold too that like I know LeVert Hill got called on it, but he would have gotten called otherwise.
Yeah, well, maybe. Like if LeVert Hill doesn't get called for that and nobody gets called for anything on that, I don't know. Like I might have been like plus one Ravens racing. I kind of think I wouldn't because like it was
quite obvious that like the guy's momentum stopped and then he stumbled for a second.
I mean, because I was watching that live.
Yeah,
and watching it live, the flag came out and I was like, "Yep, Kalik."
I got the before. I thought it was. Yeah, I swore it was Kalik. I was telling people like around me, like, "Oh, it was Kalik Hudson," and then like they say Hill, and I'm like, "Yeah, they probably just got the number wrong."
Yeah, that's
like I didn't see Hills at all, but I saw
the number,
like,
and it took until like Monday before I knew.
Yeah, I was so high up, so I could see like how things were progressing, and when I saw them breaking out for a pass. The first thing I do is look to see who's open. And, like, the first thing I see is Kalik getting passed and reaching out.
Yeah.
And, like, you feel that and that happens.
So. And then, I don't want to say he was totally, he was a participant on their long chunk run. But because of the way Michigan was handling that, so they were put in a bad situation immediately on that. And he was able to shoot upfield of the offensive tackle the first time.
Yeah.
Make a great play, get a stop, get a punt. Big play in that game that we didn't know was going to be a big play in that game. Like getting him to go three and out on their first drive.
Oh, at the moment, I thought it was massive. No, at that moment, I was like, that's huge.
But then
these guys never go three and out and be able to like take that from them. Like, yes, yes.
So they came back to the same thing. So
right. It was like the very next play, wasn't it?
So they run their triple option. They get the pitch because Uche pops up on the quarterback immediately. And they have a blocker for everybody on the edge. So Hudson goes and tries to do the exact same thing he did before. The OL is wise to it this time, and there is your chunk run. So that's an RPS issue. That's something that you know Michigan had to adopt to and did. And
I understood going just like against Air Force a few years ago. They're going to get you a few times and things like that.
My only
These
concern
guys live
there
in
is
this
like
world.
You just gave that guy that move. You can't expect that it's going to work two times in a row because that OL just went to the sideline and got an earful about how that is unacceptable. So, like, I just wish he was able to, like, be like, all right, this guy's going to faint, and then I'm going to go back. And that would have been another great play. He couldn't pull it off. So, and then because he went upfield and didn't get it, there's no funnel back to help. So that's a play where if you try that, you got to make it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't able to do that, which is one for two, which isn't the worst situation there. But that was another one of his big kind of swingy plays. So he was very up and down, and you get a couple more plays from Hudson, and you get a couple fewer of the big errors, and Army is probably sitting on 7 points at the end of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody feels a little bit better.
And if you get Army to a point where it's like the fourth quarter and they're down two touchdowns, it's over. You saw that like Michigan was playing strategically, saying, "Look, you guys can't go, 80 yards in 3 minutes. Yeah. Good luck."
Because once you get down to 3 minutes in any Army game, you have the advantage,
right?
If it's a tie game. But anyway, so Hudson was the other guy who really stood out as like this is why this game was the way it was. In terms of other guys who stood out, Aiden Hutchinson had a big play on the first drive to stuff him for 0 yards on the first play from scrimmage. Obviously had the giant play in the second overtime.
How cool was that play? I think he took, like, rocked back or stepped back a little bit.
He stepped like he was slanting away.
Right. And then, like, so the lineman passes him up. Right. So he's, like, he's been playing these guys all day. He's, like, cracked the code, and he saves it for this moment. Yeah. It was just brilliant.
And the other possibility is he got the call wrong.
He is a true sophomore.
and then was able to rescue it.
His dad was like one of the Bo, I think, said his dad was one of the smartest players he ever coached.
We're gonna give him full credit.
Yeah.
But
can I give someone else full credit for something?
We're gonna give that full credit. Yeah. But
okay.
Slight possibility. And he was consistently pretty good in a situation where he often got partial doubles and that kind of stuff. That's something that, like, we're going to go play Wisconsin. We probably don't have Duong Phor. We don't know what we're getting out of
Donovan next segment. Jeter.
And, this is more about Hutchinson. And I'm like, is having Aiden Hutchinson at 280 pounds as a three tech next to Uche the worst idea in the world?
I mean, Purdue is getting the same kind of thing out of George Karlaftis right now.
Yeah.
Which is the guy that Michigan wanted badly.
Yes.
For the same reasons they wanted Aiden Hutchinson badly a year earlier. So, yes, you can absolutely play that kind of guy in there. And
well, we're going to find out.
Wisconsin's the worst, absolute worst team to start against. But
like, if Duong Phor is not available and they don't want to play their freshman, they can't play two defensive tackles 100% of the time against Wisconsin.
I just wish we could, like, fast-forward Mozzie Smith, like, a couple. Yeah. Anyway, you can't do that in the future. You can't.
Thank you, Seth.
But you probably can't play a 275-pound guy against Wisconsin at defensive tackle. But
are you talking about Mason?
Well, we'll get to Mason later. Yeah, we'll get to that later. No, but I mean Hutchinson. At 275, 280, I don't know.
He's going to have to. That's the short end of it.
Yeah.
He's got a great rip move, and he's going to have to use that because he's going to have to play there. The other guy who I thought stood out in a positive way was Jordan Glasgow.
Yeah.
So he's a guy who doesn't look like he brings a lot of meat to the party. That's phrasing. doesn't look like
just
he's
throwing on the pile of things we've said about Glasgow.
He's not the heftiest guy in the world, but you know, when he runs up and hits a pile, it tends to stop. Like, there were a couple of zero yak plays where I was like, who did that? And I looked at it four times and I was like, did Jordan Glasgow do that? And then I looked at it four more times and I was like, yep.
Yeah.
He did.
Just stopped him dead.
So he was able to, you know, get over a couple of blocks and get to the sideline a couple times. He's rangy. He'll stick his face in. I think he's vaguely draftable. Like, don't hold me to that, but, like, I would not be surprised to see the Glasgows go 3-for-3.
Wow, man. His role in this game was similar to Kalik's on the other side. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Kalik was a deep safety. He was one of the three safeties.
Okay.
So they had,
I thought, because he was on the, I mean, he always ended up on the pitch man on the triple options, but
I mean, he was mostly opposite Uche when they were in a stack.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they'd bring Hudson down a little bit when they went to the four-man line. But in any case, they had pretty different roles. The middle linebacker, whoever it was, I have all the sympathy in the world for them. I actually came out with decently positive grades for both of them, and I don't know what exactly Pro Football Focus was expecting. It's possible that there were a couple of cuts that both guys took that I was like minus one, and they were like awful, minus 64, which is, you know, they're right.
Yeah, well, their system is like whether it was effective or not, and like not the degree of difficulty and like what you're supposed to do about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Anthony came in the second half and did have one nice play where he seemed to anticipate what was going to happen. And this was, I think, one of the bad Uche plays.
Mm-hmm.
So Michigan looked like they were in some trouble, and Anthony was able to rescue it, hold it down to like 3 or 4 yards. So that was probably the best play of the day from a middle linebacker. And then Josh Metellus was flawless. Like, he was put in some situations where, you know, he had to maintain the edge in a very important spot or make a tackle in space in an important spot, and he did it every time. So this site's ongoing yell at the Michigan fan base for Josh Metellus errors that happened 2 years ago will continue. He was very good.
Are people even like knocking him anymore? It's
I don't know.
Fallen completely out of my.
It's possible. Well, what
we might just be like.
What'll happen is that the next time Metellus has a bad play in an important spot,
uh-huh,
everybody will be like, "Oh, he's always been terrible." When it's just like, no, no, it's
he was terrible with the Giants too.
It's hard to play safety. So, and then you know, the tactical approach in this game, I don't know. Like, I've done a total of 3 triple option games.
Yes, I thought about, like, when I was doing the first write-up on this, I thought about, like, going and watching a Navy game or an Army-Navy game and seeing, like, what they do to each other.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's all chess for that thing, right? They're both over-prepared for that game. And I got, like, you know, 5 minutes into it, and I'm like, what am I doing? I can't see anything.
You'd,
I can't understand anything.
You'd need years.
Yeah.
So the one thing that did kind of get to me sometimes is, like, so they had a 4th-and-2 with the 17. And Michigan's still in their 3-man line. They're still, like, they've got Uche up because they're in their jumbo package. And the linebackers are still 3 or 4 yards off the line of scrimmage. And I'm like, that's free. Like, yeah. you can't just give them 4th-and-2 on the 17. You need to, like, if they pitch it and they score a touchdown, okay. Like, it was at the 15. That wasn't even a big play. And, you know, Michigan, they did have an opportunity on 4th-and-1 in the second half, and they did get super aggressive, and then they almost had it, and Hawkins took a false step, made a great play after that, so I didn't actually neg him because it was a 2-yard game. Mm-hmm. But that was just painful because Hawkins was like one step at the beginning of that play away from a game-changing stuff. But
yeah.
I thought other than that, he played pretty well too. Not at the same level as Metellus, but I'm pretty comfortable with Hawkins as a run defender, and then, you know, the pass defender stuff is still an open question.
Do we learn anything about the defensive line? I mean, we mentioned Hutchinson, but, like, do we learn anything about Kemp, or is it just the fact that, like, he stood there and took it?
Well, so his job was very specific. So the center is going to lunge out at him, and
right.
He's going to dodge the center, try to get behind the center before the guard can take his knees out, and then do something on the – and he did a decent job. And yeah. I don't think that is relevant to anything else he's ever going to do in his football career.
Except for it takes an incredible amount of guts to do that.
It takes guts, and
like he's like, I you know, anyone who plays nose tackle against one of these teams, just yeah. like the fan should buy him beers from the rest of his life. Like, you just stood there and took that, and that it looks miserable on film to like have to do that.
And he graded up pretty well. He graded up decently well in the opener too. Kind of the problem with him last year is he did the same thing. So he was pretty good against the lower level teams, and then he was a non-entity.
I mean, he's never going to be huge.
No, I mean, but, you know, I'm talking about, like, netting out at 0 and not netting out at +4, which is what you need to do as a defensive tackle to be okay.
Yeah.
So, what's he going to do against Wisconsin? Survive. That's what I'm hoping. And then hopefully he can go from there and be, you know, a B or B-plus player. I wouldn't put too much on this game just because of the very specific thing he was asked to
right.
do over and over again.
Right. And I guess the middle linebackers are kind of in that boat too.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Anything else that we learned? Oh, Don Brown with his move call.
Oh, the crazy thing is they have this press conference and then I'd forgotten what play it was and I'm just doing it. And then I hear someone scream, "Move!" I was like, "Holy wow." They like got it on. So I clipped a false start.
First time in the history
of UFR. I was like, this false start is interesting.
But I mean, like, the false starts in this game aren't like, you know, oops and then move on. Yeah. This is like, it changes the whole dynamic if they get one. Or the
Slomka penalty.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I didn't plus anyone. Like, I think it was Metellus that, like, goaded him into
it. I would be doing that all game, and I'd also be like getting in the ref's ear as much as I could about chop blocks.
Yeah, there were a couple. Like,
there's always going to be a couple because of the way they play. Like, you just can't pay attention necessarily to like when someone disengages when you're diving at people's legs. So like they chop block all the time, and I don't think it's on purpose.
Well,
I think it's
so,
just like that's what they do.
Like, there's kind of the borderline stuff I pointed out with Kemp where he takes contact from the center goes by because he avoids him, and then he takes a pretty immediate hit to the knee, and I'm like, this happens so often that it must be illegal by the letter of the law, but that looks pretty dangerous. And then there were a couple where, you know, Hutchinson was engaged, and there's a guy falling at his knees, and it's like, yeah, that's a chop block. Like,
Yeah. There were I think at least one that was just an obvious call.
I thought there were two that I was pretty surprised didn't get called.
When I did the full film for these guys, I brought up the chop blocks because like one of them was just so egregious. And so a guy who played for Army in like the 90s jumped into the comments.
Yeah.
And like started explaining exactly what a chop block, like, you know, if your shoulder makes contact at the waist, they're never going to call it.
I think it's pretty different now, actually. There was a video of a Navy chop block on Ed Oliver last year that was just like, oh my god, like that man is gonna be a top 10 pick in the draft, and I can't believe his knee survived this. So it happens from time to time, and I mean it's not dirty, it's just that when you play the style, it's inevitable that sometimes you're gonna mess up.
And my point is that the coaches, this guy had been coached by someone who plays the style, and they know down to like the micron where they're allowed to hit somebody and everything. You know, you're going to screw it up. They're still college guys, but like that's it happens in that style all the time. And I would prefer we just banned it.
All right, let's take a break. Come back, talk about the Badgers.
You might be investing on your own or working with another advisor, but how would you grade your results? I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP, founder and president,
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. For over 20 years, we've been working with institutional strategists, putting together low-cost portfolios which match your risk tolerance. If you have over $500,000 in your portfolio, you should consider a second opinion. You can connect with us online and schedule an appointment at peakwm.com.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
The waves, he will never ever be the same. Now he bears a burden on his soul.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.3 live from the Bow Store on Main Street. Yeah. It's now time to talk about the Badgers, but first, we're
I want to talk about some beer.
Yeah, you've been drinking. You drank all the beer. I didn't get to have any.
I gave you all the.
Gave me some of it.
I gave you all the.
But you have like this week. Document here with like 16 different beers in it, and you gave me two.
I gave you more than two. I told you to take whatever you wanted to. I've also gone out and tried a few myself.
Oh.
I'm actually liking
Where did you go?
I'm liking the sponsorship a lot. Meijer is where I got it.
Oh, Meijer.
Yeah.
I think I went to a bar.
I don't know. I keep asking.
Never mind.
Yeah. I wonder why I get to go to a bar. Never mind. No, but I tried the 98 Problems is the one that I bought a six-pack of. That's the one. 98 Problems.
98 Problems.
Yeah,
huh?
They've got like one that's no problems. They've got one like all the problems. They've got like one that's just like, and then 98 Problems.
It's like a Jay-Z / bottles of beer mashup.
I guess. I think that they were trying to go for like a here's our level of IPAs. I'm not really sure of this. I'm not doing a good job of selling the sponsor.
No, because like the 98 like, Problems is not like what you would expect from like a this is many problems, so it has all the hops. It's balanced.
It's very balanced. And
it doesn't
like,
have the
malty and softer.
What I call the FU hops, where it's just like
Thank God, yes.
Yeah.
And like now the summer's getting over and there's like less reasons to drink an IPA that like...
Fewer.
Okay, fewer.
What?
I do fix this on the blog all the time.
This is
a
Michigan
podcast.
I don't make
that mistake. I'm a Midwesterner. You know how long it took me to say the word nuclear correctly? Like I screwed that up so many times.
You just screwed
nuclear.
It up.
Nuclear.
You put a U in it the first time.
That's amazing. It still sounds like I do, though, because I had to practice not saying nuclear.
That's crazy. So,
yeah.
Story about my kid. So I asked my kid what his major malfunction is, and he's supposed to say, I don't listen to my parents, because he doesn't, and that's his major malfunction. But what he says is, I don't speak to my parents. So very similar situation. Also kind of proves my point there.
That I'm two?
No, with him.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, that kind of proves my point. And he's like, I'm three.
Okay.
I don't get logic or anything.
Well, you should give him some 98
and
problems.
And I'm like, at least I'm experienced having this kind of debate with people. Where I'm like, here's various good reasons for a thing. And they're like, nope. Relatedly, I retweeted the ESPN report on Blackwell's deposition.
Uh-huh.
Where he says that Mark D'Antonio ignored various warnings about Austin Robinson from his own coaches.
What was fascinating, it was his defensive line coach. It was the guy who was supposed to be coaching Austin Robinson. He was like, I don't want this guy in my room.
So anyway, this is the kind of quality comeback I get when I retweet ESPN articles.
Uh-huh.
The only thing ESPN is good for is college football and the Masters. #SpaceIrrelevantChannel. And I'm just like... Did you not expect them
to
report?
I know it has major malfunction.
On a deposition? Like, it's a deposition. Like, that's...
Let me tell you Twitter's major malfunction.
What is the... the fact that I can't take a dollar from this person who tweeted at me? That would solve so much if, like, I would be like, I want a dollar from you. You tweeted at me. You are in my power to take a dollar.
I'm sure they've thought about, like, paid Twitter accounts.
It's not paid Twitter. Like, it's...
Like, pay a dollar to be a follower, and then you could be like,
Twitter, no longer a follower.
Yeah,
Twitter's not making any of the money here. I'm making the money.
I'm taking the dollar. That's what I'm saying. Twitter could be like, okay, look, you're a famous person.
And then
people
you
want to follow
anybody.
And like,
until you re-up.
Yeah.
And Twitter's like, we're going to take $2, and then you get one more dollar. And if you screw up again, here you go.
That Brilliant.
Would be, yes. Me for Twitter CEO. That Jack guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Anyway, seriously. 98 Problems is a pretty good beer, and I'm going to...
We're still in the read.
I'm going to drink. We're on the read until we say the line, man. Until we say the line at the end, we're still on the read. I'm charging you for all this too, Perrin.
Find Perrin beers at Meijer, Whole Foods, Kroger starting next month at any bar with any sense of taste, or check out their selection at perrinbrewing.com. And
there,
now,
it is done.
Now the read is done. They wanted 30 seconds. Well, that's what they got. That's what they got.
That was a fantastic read.
First the cats, and now the ever-expanding.
Now they're going to have to like take a copy of that whole read and like send it on up the chain and be like, you know, here's what they talked about in their read.
There's going to be just a podcast where the Perrin read starts at the beginning and ends at the end. Anyway, Wisconsin. Let's talk about their defense first, because I'm a little bit less alarmed by it.
Okay. Yeah.
So
they're the defense that is like number one in the country in total yardage by like double.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. So last year, their defensive line was a major issue for them.
Because they were all hurt.
Yes, largely because of injuries. So they get Garrett Rand back, who missed all of last year. They get, what's it called?
Loudermilk.
And he was...
It's a great Wisconsin name.
Yes, but he was pretty bad last year, partially because he was injured. And they graduate Olive Segapulu, and now they're starting a...
A true freshman?
True freshman nose tackle.
Yeah, so... That's it's a little bit wrong because look, they actually stay in a 2-4 five nickel all the time.
A 2-4-5 nickel.
That's what they've always been, is their nickel. Like their defense, their OLBs are defensive ends, and their DEs are like very defensive tackle-ish DEs.
Yeah, but they were like a straight 3-4 for like the past.
Yes, they are. Yes, they have been. And I didn't see a single 3-4 in either one of these games.
Okay.
Yeah. So what they did is they pulled. Instead of having a defensive tackle, they've
so
been
no
using
nose
their nose
tackle.
Yeah, the nose tackle is just Garrett Rand's backup. Rand is really the nose tackle right okay. now. And they're playing a 4-3. I joked around about it because they're using different terminology.
But no,
they're playing a 4-3.
You got a 235 guy, pound guy, and a 221 pound guy
who's hurt.
Who's hurt?
Yeah, the 240 pound guy is really
this,
out there.
This like 2-4-5 thing is really what it is.
Yeah, it's a 2-4-5 nickel. It's like it's a nickel.
So these guys are, like, super light.
For Wisconsin, yeah.
For anybody.
Well, I mean, a lot of teams play like this now.
Nobody plays with, like, a 235 pound.
No, but they're light at defensive tackle. For what they're doing, they're light at defensive tackle. You can get away with,
but like so if
235, 240 pound defensive ends.
If they're playing a 4-3,
yeah.
And one of their defensive ends is 235 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And one of their defensive ends is 220 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't that strike you as... I don't know, playing a freshman Mario Ojemudia kind of thing?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit?
A little bit.
A little bit.
The problem is it's impossible to gauge what these guys are right now. Like you said, like their numbers are off the freaking charts because they played two offenses that are just terrible and had their worst games ever.
Okay.
So, like, I was watching USF. I'm like, I can't use this. Like, USF is just screwing up things on their own. I can't even like get to the part where Wisconsin does something because USF screwed it up first. So then I'm like, okay, I'll switch over to CMU. It takes me forever to find CMU. And they're doing the same thing. So unless like Wisconsin
could have predicted
you bad.
Who could have predicted an offseason spent viewing shark smut would have resulted in a bad football team?
You can get away, McElwain, but you can't get away from us.
Every week is Shark Week in Mount Pleasant now. Every week is Shark Week.
Well, this was they looked like sharks had been coaching them.
All right.
So maybe he like, you know, brought the sharks in as his assistants and had them can't use any of the film.
So this is actually a fascinating matchup that could go pear-shaped for Wisconsin. Pretty quickly.
Yeah. If Michigan wants to stay with their speed and space stuff, it could be a...
Well, this doesn't seem like speed and space. This seems like just pave them.
Yeah, well, you have to spread them out because they do have a nose tackle still. He's a true freshman. But, like...
Nose tackle. I'm
okay.
I'm willing to roll with that.
I'm guessing you haven't read the FIFO film yet.
Buddy, I got problems.
Yeah, 98 of them.
Yeah, 98 problems. Do you think this guy's a player?
It's hard to tell. USF was probably like already deep in the B-pone by the time he came in. But his first three plays were like an animal.
Okay, but he's not, I mean, like, USF center, fine. Cesar Ruiz?
Yeah, well...
Like, taking Onwenu-Ruiz double? Like,
I mean, like, what do you want me to do? He's a true freshman, and I saw him play one game.
He
murdered the guy across from him. He can murder guys who are USF centers.
All right.
Never seen them against Cesar Ruiz, and...
But you gotta expect that he's gonna get clocked.
Could be. He's 6'4", 315 already.
Yeah, but
he's a big kid.
He's going to get clocked.
I think they're going to get... I think they can mess with him. It's just underrated. Like, a defensive tackle can't just stay in a spot and, like, suck up double teams. You have to know what you're doing to be in there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Michigan will be playing their freshman defensive tackles.
Yes.
So, there are things you can do to this guy that he's never seen, and Harbaugh is pretty good at them. I don't know it's Gattis' offense, but, like, the guy's in the room.
Yeah.
And knows how to mess around with defensive tackles.
All right, so they lost both of their inside linebackers last year, and Ryan Connolly and TJ Edwards were a couple of the best guys in college football. How have they managed to, like, maintain their infinite
So
inside linebacker factory.
Well, number one, yes, yes, they have. They have with one guy. But first, before I want to get to him, Chris Orr is still around. This guy is just blessed with the most infinite eligibility since Jim Sorge.
Is this his sixth year?
I don't know. I think it's just his fifth year, but I remember him starting in 2015 for the first half of the season.
Sure.
The list of guys that he has started over is ridiculous, and he's still out there now because I think he had a 2016 with the ACL. The other guy, the new guy, is Jack Sanborn. I was like, okay, they found another walk-on. He was a superstar because he looked exactly like Ryan Connolly out there. I looked him up, and he's a four-star. Yep.
Nuclear.
Don't start with me on this. I practice this. Someone called me out on it, like on the Michigan Daily, like when I was 21, yeah. And like I spent like a week saying it to myself.
We've really covered the gamut here.
Jack
Fond du Lac to nuclear.
Jack Sanborn is the guy. He's a dude. The other linebackers are just kind of guys. The outside linebacker Zach Bond. He's a guy we knew about.
Did we?
Oh yeah.
You got a star on Loudermilk. He was awful last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was injured last year.
Okay.
The year before that, he was actually pretty good. He's a pretty good player.
All right. That's my phone.
All right. Anyway, Bond's a guy we knew about. He was in our draft again.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to that. Yeah, I was participating, but I didn't pay attention.
We didn't even finish it. Now you can draft Jack Sanborn.
But they're starting nose tackles out for the year. There's one of their starting safeties, Scott Nelson, is also out for the year.
Yeah, they went three deep in safeties. They lost their hybrid space player by that.
Okay.
So like they were playing Burrell, who was the starting safety last year against us.
Wasn't he terrible?
He's combustible.
Okay.
He's the most athletic safety they have, but also the guy most likely to run in the complete opposite direction where he should be.
Sure.
And then Reggie Pearson is like one of those really tiny safeties that like they had last year.
Yeah.
So Dakota Dixon part two.
So if you're attacking this defense, how are you doing it?
Cornerbacks. You remember those cornerbacks.
The cornerbacks? You think that's the weakness?
Yeah, those guys, they either play off or they grab him like crazy. And, one of them's kind of a Brandon Watson guy. He's a backup now, but he was starting before.
Rashad Wildgoose?
No, it's a Caesar Williams. Rashad Wildgoose isn't just – he's not like the fourth guy. He was starting last year.
Yeah, did they get guys back from injury here too? And they're still bad?
Yeah, they weren't really injured last year. They were just all banging around against each other. Like, no one could – they're on – Daron Harrell was a former receiver. So last year he just converted, and now he kind of knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Fayon Hicks is just a guy.
All right.
Yeah. So we have Nico Collins, we have Tariq Black, and they're going to play a lot of cover two and cover three, which means you can hit them underneath there, and if they come up and start grabbing you and playing cover one, then you get them over the top. And hope that the officials call it, because they're grabbier than we are. They're grabbier than the state is.
Yes, I distinctly remember the hoodie era of Wisconsin.
Yeah, these guys are like the next generation after that. These guys, they learned from the hoodies.
Yeah.
And it's a little too warm still to wear hoodies, but I'm sure that they'll bring them out eventually, these guys.
All right, but like, I just don't understand how you're like, all right, we're looking at a defensive line with either a freshman nose tackle or like two bona fide defensive linemen, and you're like, got to throw the ball.
Okay, well, because I'm a Michigan fan, man. If you start going down the middle, hit them down the middle, Loudermilk is a good player. Rand is a good player. Those guys are going to, Carlo Kemp it up. And
how does Mike Onwenu not have a star?
I've been waiting for you to give one.
Plus 19 last week.
You forgot to mention that in the offensive section, too.
In the season preview, I said I thought he was an All-American.
Well, I asked you at the beginning of the season, who do I star? And Onwenu didn't get one, but I'm ready. I'm very ready for that one.
All right, well.
Did I have one on, yeah, I did have one on Shea.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back and talk about the, maybe not so. I'm reassuring.
Maybe we'll be fine. Maybe we'll be
so
fine.
I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he's like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like. I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGO blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
She lives all alone. She makes a ruska, she makes a vodka, makes it in her home. She makes a ruska,
ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
makes it all night long. She makes a ruska,
ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
singing this crazy song.
La da da da.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.3 live from the Bow Store on Main Street.
Yeah. I just got a request to turn your volume up, Ryan, so we're doing that now.
I keep telling you.
Yeah, we are. All right, now you're there.
I keep... Come on.
Maybe I just talk more clearly?
No. You're just...
Sound very loud in my ears.
Well...
Yeah.
You're just going to have to deal.
Okay. I'm dealing. I got some defensive tackles, and I'm going to go out there and deal.
All right. So the Wisconsin offense pretty much just reloads.
It's just the Wisconsin offense.
Every year they have an All-American center. They have a guy who was one of Pro Football Focus's top-ranked run blockers a year ago who didn't even start, who's their left tackle. That's Cole Van Lanen. They got Quintez Cephas back from sexual assault allegations that he got acquitted from, so that fine.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Taylor still around, so it's pretty much Wisconsin. And then the question you have is Jack Cohn anywhere near what he's shown in the first couple of weeks? Kind of seems like the answer is probably not.
Yeah,
because we've seen a fair amount of him so far.
Yeah, and like his teammates are going to talk him up and everything.
Sure.
And 400 yards against anybody is impressive, but CMU just busted everything for him. Like, you know, the USF game was a lot more telling, I thought, and he looked a little shaky, especially when he got pressure in this game, which tracks with what we saw last year.
And most of his stuff where he was able to hit was either a bust or it was just underneath. Like, he's not making Mr. Tight Windows throws, really. He's just taking advantage of what the defense gives him, and if Michigan is able to cover up his guys, you know, last year we saw a check down machine, and I think that's going to be the same.
Yeah, I charted. I was looking for them, and I charted one tight windows throw. Yeah. And then when I watched it again, it wasn't tight windows. It was he didn't see the cornerback coming off his route.
I see.
And, like, almost threw a pick. So, like, they're trying to keep things. I mean, they knew their competition wasn't going to be good, so, like, they tried to make things simple, and they tried to make sure that he could pass a lot and get him kind of comfortable. And that's what I thought it was, especially all the – people were adding me afterwards, like, oh, A.J. Taylor, you didn't talk about him enough because, like, he had a big game against CMU. He was wide open. They were game planning to get him open and just get the ball to him on easy throws.
But Michigan last year in this game ended up in third and three a lot and watched Paul Chryst throw the ball.
And guess what? They still do. They still bring in Garrett Groshek on third and three. And, I mean, I pray that 2 weeks of watching Michigan play Army didn't, like, give him, like, you know...
Didn't give
him, like, fourth down curious,
Kirk
maybe.
Ferentz powers, where all of a sudden he's the best coach in college football for one game and one game
only. Oh, my God. If Wisconsin ever discovered fourth down, everyone's dead.
Yeah. So, Michigan's problem in this game is that they have one defensive tackle who they've played ever.
Uh-huh.
Except for they have a fullback who they played against Middle Tennessee. It didn't go well, and... Donovan Jeter is supposedly healthy. He played a few snaps against Army. He's been talked up all offseason, but you don't really know what you're going to get from him. And then it's like, okay, how do we get Josh Uche on the field for most of the snaps? And that's either removing Kalik Hudson.
Uh-huh.
Which is... I could see some of that.
I mean, it's real, that would just be going to a standard 4-3, which is fine.
Yeah, and like... If you have Uche and you're like, do we want to run a 4-3 under in this game just to get five guys in the line of scrimmage, maybe make it more difficult to double some guys who we really don't want to see doubled?
Right.
You're going to give up some things by doing that, but like it kind of feels like it might be worth a try, especially because it feels like Uche versus a tight end, no matter who it is
going to be. And they've only got one tight end now. So they're right down to Jake Ferguson, who is not a great blocker. I got him in draft again, and now I'm kind of regretting that one because, like, he is not did not look good.
People have already forgotten about this.
Well, my point is that I thought he was the best tight end in the conference when I drafted him, right, and then I would not put him there now. His tape against USF was – his drop was a drop, and he ran a bad route, which is stuff that happens. His blocking was him getting dominated by USF dudes, which is not something you want to see.
The other possibility for putting Uche on the field is going with something similar to what we saw against Army, especially in the second half where Uche's on the line of scrimmage.
Uh-huh.
You're still playing a three-man line.
And then you're taking Hutchinson or Pay off the field, and both those guys are your best defenders.
No, because you're just playing a 3-3-5.
Okay.
And you've got Uche on the line of scrimmage, and your nominal three-tech is Hutchinson. You're going to try to live with that. And then if I'm Michigan, I'm going to send Kalik Hudson screaming across the line on most snaps.
Sure.
Just because we've seen him make some errors in coverage, but we also saw him against Army turn in probably the play of regulation by beating a blocker and getting into the face of the quarterback for that interception. He's always been an elite blitzer. Yep. Michigan needs some guys crossing the line of scrimmage. He's a good candidate.
Yep. Oh, I've been in favor of blitzing him for a long time. I know why they couldn't do it last year. And... you know, Wisconsin's got Quintez Cephas out there, so you do have to protect yourself a little bit when he's on your side of the field.
I'm fairly comfortable with LaVert Hill and Cephas matching up. Because Cephas is not a big separation guy. He's burly. You know, he's a leaper, and I think...
I would say he's underrated on that front. He's not going to be like, you know, getting 4-3 speed.
He's good.
He's 4-5.
But, like, if LaVert Hill is going to be... in the NFL next year,
yeah,
Michigan needs to be comfortable putting him on an island with Cephas and living with what happens.
And Cephas is going to get some of his. He's really good against zones. He's really good at like stopping and getting the ball right there.
Yeah, that's fine. So yeah, like
he's going to get some.
You put him in the sideline and try to make him run fades, and then if they hit a couple, they hit a couple. And you know, Jack Cohn downfield accuracy against tight coverage wasn't very good last year, and I think you got to make him prove it.
Yeah. So would you put Kalik into the safety rotation and play Uche at Sam?
What? No, I'm going with a 3-3-5.
Boy, this is a huge turnaround.
I'm. It's.
I mean, they just practiced it all like the last couple weeks.
I'm going with a 3-3-5, and I'm going to tighten it up, and I'm going to try to basically pretend that one of my defensive ends is going to cope as a defensive tackle, and then I'm going to blitz and hopefully get one-on-one matchups that someone wins.
I mean, that's – it's a strategy. You could – if you can put them in longer downs, Taylor is less of a problem.
Right. So if we have a defense that's leaking 5 yards on every snap,
right,
versus one that's leaking a first down on one snap and then manages to get someone in the backfield on the second snap, I feel pretty good about Michigan in a passing down.
Yes.
I feel horrible about 3rd-and-3, Paul Christ things accepted. So I this feels like it's tailor-made for Don Brown to come out with, like, just the wackiest crap in his playbook.
When has he done that, though? I mean, he hasn't had to.
He hasn't. Yeah. So this is like, okay, finally it's like mad scientist time.
Right.
He's had 2 weeks to prep. He's got two functional defensive tackles on the roster. He's got this weapon in Josh Uche. He's got Hudson, who's an elite blitzer. I think Glasgow's a very good blitzer, too. So you can bring guys from different spots. You have a pretty inexperienced Wisconsin line.
Right.
With kind of 1.5 returning starters. Like, it just seems like that's the move. And you live or die by whether your blitzes get home. Because I don't want to die by 1,000 cuts, you know?
No. And the more the offense can play against those guys and wear them down and get down to their – when they're playing without defensive tackles, see both sides of the ball, right? If you want to get more snaps against them and get them worn down. So letting Wisconsin keep the ball for 9 minutes is not going to be good for your defense either.
Right. Just got to
– if you're offense, I mean, yeah.
You got to hammer them.
Yeah.
Wild abandon.
Do you I think Josh Ross is going to be an important guy in this one here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh Ross might be eating free releasers while someone else gets guys down in the backfield.
Well, they're more of a power team this year. They kind of put a lot of the zone stuff on the shelf because they're all new offensive linemen. So, like, they're if you can read that guard and get on and get,
get
easier
on your
said
horse.
Than yeah, yeah, easier said than done against Wisconsin because they're coming and they're coming fast. But they're going to spend some time in the backfield before Taylor's coming through. And if you can get there and actually pop a guy in the backfield, teams are getting TFLs against this team, which I don't think we got a single one last year.
I think you're correct.
Yeah. So and that's huge, huge. Yeah. You get some TFLs against these guys, and you can do that out of your 4-3. I do love our ends against this team. Even with, even with Cole Van Landen out there, Hutchinson and Pay are the kind of guys that you would want to take into war against this kind of defense.
Okay.
This kind of offense.
Specifically on the ground? Or?
Yeah, because they're going to double ends all the time.
Okay.
And they're going to try to... What they're going to try to do is get your tight end around a guy and, like, knock your defensive end in and use that as the pin side and then pull around that. And you're not going to be able to do that to Quiddy. You're not going to be able to do that to Aiden. And I think that's limits where they can run to.
Well,
they're
we'll
still going to go down the middle.
Yeah, like Wisconsin manages to do quite a lot of things on the ground that sometimes you think they shouldn't. Right. I mean, this is I have no idea what to expect here. Like, untested Wisconsin line, you know, they have Michigan has some pieces and they have a mad scientist. You know, you look at this on paper and you're like, this doesn't feel good. But, you know, which offensive line do you want to be in this game? I think that's an interesting question. Right? Like, because neither defensive line exactly looks like it's really clicking.
Yeah.
Really has the personnel to be up for this. So this could be kind of a slow motion shootout if...
We have the opposite problems. I would take Wisconsin. I would take Wisconsin just because our problem is defensive tackle. And
their problem is defensive tackle.
Well, I mean, they have two good ends, but
They have a freshman nose tackle. All freshman defensive tackles are bad, and they're not even playing him for most of the time against these spread teams. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
Like, yeah,
like I get why the line has swung heavily towards Wisconsin. I think that overrates Michigan's early season fumble issues.
Oh, absolutely.
And I also feel like there's a way that Michigan can reconstitute its defense to stand up to Wisconsin. And I kind of feel like Wisconsin doesn't necessarily have answers if Ruiz and Onwenu are just kicking some guys off the ball consistently. because they don't have the kind of Uche,
yeah,
Hudson responses that they would have had last year with some of their guys.
Right. The one thing that Wisconsin fans are really excited about is Cone's, you know, early showing.
Right.
And Wisconsin fans are kind of like in their own little bubble. No one hates them and no one like bothers them. So they just can't get off on these things.
There's a lot of people who hate Wisconsin.
Like Minnesota fans. How good at hate are they?
Well, Iowa, Nebraska. There's the parallelogram of hate.
Yeah, Nebraska's not good at hate either. None of them are very good at hate. No. I don't know why they use the parallelogram of drunk, maybe.
Iowa's pretty good at hating. Anyway.
They're clever.
So, like,
I have respect for Iowa.
This game could go either way.
Yeah, what I was trying to say is that Cone is not a better quarterback than Patterson. If he is, screw it. The whole season's over.
Oh, well, that's...
Jack Cone, cheery. A better quarterback than Shea Patterson?
Well, we'll see.
In the first two games, sure. But, I mean, if it keeps on happening in this game, then, like, everyone into the B-pone.
I mean, that is kind of the thing. Like, Michigan goes down 7, and it's like, B-pone time!
Right.
It's a precarious moment in the Michigan fan base's mental health.
I think,
as it has been pretty much every week for the last 15 years.
I think Michigan fans this week finally just started saying what the problem is. Like, hello, I'm a Michigan fan, and I need to beat Ohio State.
Nah.
I mean, we all known it,
yeah.
And now everyone's finally saying it. And like,
sometimes I feel like I made a wish on a monkey's paw.
Okay.
And this is the result.
Were you hoping that the music would end before you got to the... Yeah. I hit a button.
Monkey's paw.
Who's got it better than us?
No!